Welcome to another Sad Songs podcast. Today I'm joined by Joe.
Hi.
Russell.
Hello.
Kenneth.
Yes, I'm here.
And I'm Stephen. The song we're going to talk about today is Billy Joel's The Downeaster Relaxer, which is the third song on the album Stormfront. I have listened to this song for quite a while, and another Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Fire, which I guess everyone knows. And I see that it was the one that in the Downeaster Relaxer follows on from We Didn't Start the Fire on this album, which also has Leningrad on, which I quite like. So maybe I should listen to the whole album at some point. We're going to talk about Downeaster Relaxer today because I think it's an interesting sad song in the sense that we're going to encounter a bit of a different type of sadness today in this song than some of the other ones. When we started the Sad Songs podcast, I thought a lot of these songs are going to be to do with breakup songs. Some of them are going to be songs about death, and they're going to generally be in this kind of mourning objects mode. So I've tried to pick a few songs when I'm proposing them, which break out of that a little bit. And I think this is happening in Downeaster Relaxer. One of the things which I think is really interesting about this song is that you can listen to this song and get a picture of a certain way of life, and you can almost sort of imagine what this is like for these fishermen living on Long Island. It's a way of life that I know nothing about. It's quite a long way from my own way of life. But listening to this, I can get a sense of what happened in the 80s, 90s with these last few boatmen as Long Island was becoming gentrified. If anyone sort of knows the geography of Long Island, the top parts of Long Island are the Hamptons. And, you know, if you watch Woody Allen films or sort of New York films, that's the place where rich people from New York go on holiday. House prices sort of skyrocket in this period. And the people who were the original inhabitants of this northern part of Long Island start to be economically displaced. The industry that they're in, fishing, starts to be outcompeted. A Downeaster is quite a small boat that, you know, relatively small fishing crew have. They're outcompeted by these big factory boats. And generally life in Hamptons gets so expensive that a lot of people sort of sell up, give up. So the sadness we've got in this song is a kind of economic sadness, a cultural sadness, a sadness that there's a way of life declining here. And I've got to say, I'm ambivalent about this sadness of the way of life declining. And I've got two buts that I'm going to say in this podcast about this decline. But before I get to the buts, we can see that something which has been there for a long time in Long Island is going, and we can almost get a sense of it, not just that something is going, but this very specific way of life. And a lot of the iconography, the images that are summoned up in the lyrics really allow you to sort of get a handle on, you know, maybe what it's like to be on one of these boats rocking away in the middle of the night, dead tired, kind of hopeless but determined. It's a really vivid description of what happens. And it's a really vivid description of what's going on around this act of fishing, the lack of opportunities, the economic sacrifice, the stubbornness that these fishermen are sort of feeling to keep doing it, even though it's a difficult way of life, the sense of resistance that they won't kind of give in. And there's a real sadness, I think, in all of these things that's conjured by the precariousness that this fisherman that Billy Joel is sort of playing in the song obviously feels. And at the moment, look, a lot of people live precariously and a lot of young people live precariously. I suppose we're all coming out of that period of your life where you, you know, rent a house and, you know, move between relatively bad and precarious jobs. So everyone experiences this to some extent at the beginning of their life. But there's another kind of precariousness, I guess, in more middle age where people start to depend on you. And it's not so much that what you're doing is unstable in the way that early precariousness is, but the drop-off is steeper. And I suppose the worry of falling off is a bit more intense. And when he's singing about, you know, children needing clothes and this sort of thing, there's definitely a sense of how really fragile this way of life is and how hard it is to keep it all together. And at this point, I'm going to get to my first but, right? I said there's nothing I know about this kind of way of life. But thinking about it, actually, maybe there is, right? Where I'm from in West Durham, there's a load of villagers, which were actually, they went through this process long before I was born, right? They're all mining villagers with coal mines that closed down in the 50s, in the 60s. And there's a whole string of these villages in West Durham, Evenwood, Cockfield, West Auckland, St. Helen, Auckland, Copley, which just exist there, but really have no purpose. They're just, you know, by the time I was born in the 80s, they're just areas that hold people, right? And sure, some people are trying to start some other industries to replace them, but really there's not much going on there at all. And I think, even though I said the first thing I like about this song is I can grab hold of a life that I can't really imagine, there's a second thing going on here where there is a life that I can imagine here, which is this sense of a community which is kind of falling away and drifting, and the horror at this kind of anchorlessness, right? Fishing isn't much, mining is less than not much, but at least it's something that these places sort of were hanging on to. I've got one more but in my ambivalence, but I'll hold on to this but for a while, and I'll ask everyone else what they think about this one. Joe, what did you think?
Oh, well, okay. I don't know, really. To be honest with you, I was quite surprised that we had a Billy Joel one. Billy Joel's a name I knew, but didn't really know, except for a couple of the big songs. Didn't know much. It's got a very Bruce Springsteen-y vibe to it, I think. I don't know. It's got, there's not much I can connect with in it, but I quite like its sense of place. I like its sort of very specific places and this vibe of, I didn't know what a downeaster was, which is a type of boat, and I was reading up today, and obviously he was very connected to all this and very sort of into the protests and everything else. I think it's all right. It's got a certain catchiness to it. I can't help but feel quite detached from it. It's not anything I really particularly understand.
Ross, what did you think of this one? Similar to Joe?
Well, yeah, frankly, quite similar. I've struggled to find something to catch on to within it. I mean, as Joe said, it's a very specific song and about a very specific set of circumstances with, you know, I struggled to draw the parallels, but, you know, what you were talking about, precariousness, I mean, I wonder whether that strikes a chord a little bit with our current circumstances within the COVID-19 lockdown. Obviously, a lot of people out of work, a lot of people, you know, their livelihood is at risk. You know, when you think about the lines, got bills to pay and children who need clothes, that's very true of a lot of people at this moment in time who are unable to work or have lost their businesses. Some parallels to draw with that, potentially. The other thing I thought, so maybe also related to the Northeast, another song which, you know, strikes some chords, potentially similar to this one, and that's Shipbuilding.
Shipbuilding,
The song, I think, was written by Robert Wyatt, made famous by Elvis Costello, but I thought there was some, you know, it's very much that kind of sense of place and that kind of specific environment in which the song takes place, has strikes similar chords with this song to me. But yeah, other than that, I mean, you know, it's not a song I particularly enjoyed. I didn't mind it, but I probably won't go back to it again in a hurry. I much prefer We Can Start the Fire, to be honest. But I mean, it was interesting sort of, you know, reading about it and gained a bit of knowledge that Billy Joel liked his fishing, which I never knew before. So, you know, that's some new knowledge.
Thank you, Russ. Kenneth, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like it for a start. The reason is I like a good sea shanty. I think it's one of the things I really like about the song is that it's Billy Joel who is empathizing with the community. And I don't know, I quite often hear sort of criticisms of, you know, pop stars who empathize with, you know, even like things like, you know, instead of Jarvis Cocker in Common People, I've heard people say what he drives, you know, he used to drive a Ferrari at the same time he was talking about Common People. What a hypocrite. But I mean, it's you know, in many ways, it's the right of a songwriter to empathize with other people. And I think that's one of the things that I like about this. I mean, his attempt to empathize is also a musical one as well. It's different musically to a lot of the other songs that he wrote. You know, he's got all of the, it's a kind of classic kind of 80s sort of synthesizer kind of sound going all of the way through. And at the same time, there's like a bandoneon, it's like an accordion style instrument. I'm not quite sure what it is. But very much like the kind of things they used to have on, you know, kind of ships, singing like What Shall We Do with a Drunken Sailor and that kind of thing. And there's other instruments, like there's a lovely kind of violin sort of section as well, where it's like a real fiddle, like a folk instrument, as if he's really kind of, you know, out there on his own boat. And I mean, it was quite sort of touching reading the, you know, about his involvement with this community and how he kind of was trying to, you know, help fight against, you know, certain oppressions they were facing as well. So, yeah, I take my hat off to him. I frankly rank Billy Joel generally quite low amongst the wines and spirits. I was going to mention Shipbuilding as well as a kind of a similar song, a similarly kind of empathetic song. I'll go the Shipbuilding's, you know, kind of one or two notches up in integrity for me. I'll go the opposite way and mention another song that I know about boats, which is by Deacon Blue. Dignity. Anyone know that one?
No.
No, it's not a particularly sad song, except it is in a way. I don't like Deacon Blue at all. I should say that from the start, in the same way that I detest, say, Cooler Shaker or someone like that. But it's Deacon Blue's song. It's all about this kind of guy who's like a real nobody. It's a ballad, and he's got nothing in his life. And it turns out that all these years he's been saving up his money so that he can buy a ship. And his ship is a kind of escape. The ship's called Dignity. So it's like a kind of a social status kind of thing. But it's all about how he's sailing away. One of the things that I think this song does tie in with the sad songs that we've been talking about is that a lot of them have this vision or an image of the sea and being by the coast. Stephen talked about this in the first one in relation to Kant, and that kind of image of the sublime being a kind of, you know, yearning to escape, you know, into the sea, the kind of the vast ocean. And I think we mentioned it with the two that we discussed the other day, both of them, the one with the portholes in the window, Bono's portholes. And I think all of the songs have had some image of the sea. It's this big kind of wide world out there. The thing that seems to me to be different about this one is that the sea is something much more sort of perfunctory. It's not really an escape. He's always got to keep coming back onto the land. It's a way of life, which is dying. You know, you can't find any fish anywhere for a start. So he has a much different relation to the sea. It's not this sense of freedom, of yearning to be out there. It's something much more kind of hard and materialistic. And I think Joel empathizes with that quite well.
Well, anyone got any further comments, or shall I go into my third butt at this point?
Go into your third butt, Stephen.
I had my one story, but it's actually really dog shit, so we're probably not. It's just that his rhythm guitarist liked an Instagram post of ours which referenced a Billy Joel song because someone had a heart attack at our first gig. So
someone had a heart attack at your first gig?
Yeah. Oh, and God. He's sort of mates with a drummer, but he stayed for the gig and then didn't seek medical help till after. The gig was that good, I might hammer home. Our drummer tweeted about it with a reference to the Billy Joel song that says heart attack or something. I don't know. Oh. And Billy Joel's rhythm guitarist liked the, it was an Instagram post actually.
So the third thing I think about this song, which is when I reflect on this kind of sense of empathy and sadness for the Long Island boatman, is, basically fuck it right off, right? There's a sort of aesthetic in this you can see where, yeah, we've shown this kind of lifestyle, this traditional way of life, and you know, we have this kind of sense of horror that it's ebbing away and stuff. But, I mean, is this what we want? Do we just want these sort of peasant lifestyles that have been lived in Long Island for 200 years of these sort of boatmen to just run over and over again for all eternity? And the line of philosophers that I like, really, this sort of team of philosophers, they're against this idea of the traditional life being the only possible kind of life, right? And they look at these forces which have run wild in the 20th century and transformed the traditional economy, pulled people off the land, uprooted them away from traditional ways of life, technology, capital, information, all these things that have kicked in, and actually made things a lot better. I mean, one of the philosophers I think about here is Lyotard, who has this famous passage in Libidinal Economy where he sort of says, hang on tight and spit on me, but isn't it true that, you know, the English working class actually loved what moving to the cities had did to them? They loved this kind of life in the factories and in the pubs and what they'd got to, not what they'd got away from. And this line of thought's got me into trouble a few times when I've sort of told people about this. But my granddad lived in Seam Harbour, which is a mining town in the East Durham coalfield. And the mines there closed a lot later than the ones in the West Durham coalfield where I'm from. And the mines in Seam basically closed after the miners' strike. So they kind of won the strike. And then very quickly afterwards, they lost the battle. And the pits closed down one by one between sort of 84 and 1990. And everything that was in those towns was destroyed, right? The lifestyle of the workers, it had just all totally disappeared. There was nothing for them to do. All of the sort of social clubs and miners' institutions that they built for themselves all slowly kind of rotted as no one was there to maintain them. But my granddad, even though this had happened, was actually quite pleased the mines had closed, and because no one else had to go down them. No one else got sort of sent down this, you know, lift into a hole in the ground and claustrophobic, horrible space. And he wanted whatever was going to come next for the people in that town. The sad thing was nothing really did come next for them, which is the sort of true awfulness of this story. But it's not necessarily the ending of these traditional lives, I think, which sometimes are just, you know, just because they've been going for a while doesn't mean that they're the best thing. Don't know if anyone has a comment on that one.
Yeah, I was going to just say, I once had to get you out of a fight for making that remark back in 2004, I think it was.
It was, funny enough, it was actually a parallel I was going to bring up, Stephen, before you said that, was about old mining towns and the old mining culture. And then you brought that up. So, yeah, you've said what I was probably going to say, but much less eloquently. But, yeah, interesting.
Russ, a final thought on this one? Does it strike you as sad in any way?
I thought it was sad, yeah. And I guess, you know, not on the immediate, you know, my first listen, I thought, you know, I guess it's got a vaguely sad feeling to it. But, you know, looking into the lyrics, you know, I tried to read a bit about the history, but got a little bit bored, so your explanation was very useful there. And I think, you know, as a consequence of this podcast, I kind of understand the depth of sadness that was there and put in context with something a bit closer to home, you know, even more so. So yeah, I think it counts as a sad song.
Well, thank you all for having a go at this one, which was a bit sort of out of left field. Next time, we're going to talk about the granddaddy song Jed's Other Poem, and Kenneth is going to tell us about that one. So thank you for listening. Hope to see you then.